The world we live in can be a strange place, and usually even stranger through the eyes of a magician. Join Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman for their laid-back, no-holds-barred chat about the news, life, movies. In fact, who knows what they will talk about. Grab a drink, buckle up, and get ready for Wizards, Whiskey, and Waffle.
Hi, guys, and welcome to another week of Wizards, Whiskey, and Waffle with me, Peter Nardi, and of course, Mark Spellman. Hiya, Mark.
Hello, my lovely. How are you?
I'm good. Really good.
What have you got lined up? What's wetting your palate on this occasion?
What, drink-wise?
No, just what's wetting your palate. Yeah, drink, obviously.
Right. drink-wise, I have got... today, I'm on the rye. It's still another Jack Daniels.
No, but the rye is good.
Rye is good. With Coke.
Yeah. You know what? Let's take it steady. Mm. You know, all these whiskey experts out there, yeah, whatever. In our own time, we're not going to be pressured. We're not going to be bullied into going straight on the rocks.
No.
You hardcore guys. yeah. Okay. I'm on a Woodford Reserve, which Ooh. Is one of my faves.
Yeah.
And I do have that. I'm actually going a bit stronger tonight with the Woodford Reserve. So I'm saying it's almost a 50-50 ratio here with ice. So if I start slurring and falling over at the end of this, by the time this podcast finishes, then you know why.
Right. Well, we did get very drunk in Borough Market on Woodford Reserve.
Oh, we did. That was, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. yes, we did.
Right.
Yes, we did.
So,
Mark, go on. Yes.
We have been saying it for a long time, and we're going to do it now. So we are going to talk about, in this episode, X and how it happened. Why it happened, what's happening now, and yeah, because we've been saying we're going to do it, and did I know? So anyway,
okay.
I've got a little BGT intro, which I'm going to play now, and then we're going to go straight into it.
Go for it.
A little bit loud, but there you go.
That was great. I've got headphones on. That really did actually just, yeah.
That was a bit loud. So, the question I always get asked is, did I know you were X? And yes, I did, because you rung up and told me when you were thinking of re-entering. So, yeah. I think we may have touched on this sort of in the first episode or the second episode, but just explain why you decided to do it again.
Okay, so... I'm going to really try and keep this condensed because I'm so aware that my mind just controls my mouth. Okay, so there you go. Even this. So I did BGT in 2018, as mentioned earlier, with About Tessa and life, hope, dreams, aspirations, never giving up, all that kind of stuff. And as a magician, I hid various elements within my performances. So in Isabella's Cot, on that very first audition, when I got the golden buzzer from Matt and Deck, you'll see inside Isabella's Cot, if you look this up on YouTube, you'll see that there is a picture of John Lennon and the word hope is underneath.
Mm.
So the original idea that I had, originally I walked into Isabella's room and just because I knew that whole puppet penguin, that was the first toy that she ever had in her incubator when she was in hospital. So I knew that was going to be part of that video, the puppet penguin that Alicia chose in the audition.
Yeah.
And I remember I had my iPhone. I thought Isabella was asleep. I thought, right, let me just go in and just do that little video clip. Obviously I've got to film it to put it together for the reveal. And it was really weird. I went back down into the studio where I am now and started editing it all together. And I thought, you know what? I'm missing something here. This is a really powerful thing. It's a really important message that I'm trying to convey and all that. And, you know, and as you know, and I know, as magicians, you always think, what can I add? What can I put? What could there be? And there's a term, I don't know if it's exclusive to magic, but we call it Easter eggs, right?
Yeah.
But that's what they put. I think it's a film terminology.
Yeah, it was
isn't
it? On. Like it was DVDs and games, wasn't it? Easter
right,
eggs.
Okay. So there are sort of like, so for those that don't know, an Easter egg is an hidden kind of element within so you completely don't register it, but it's there. So as an example, in a film called The Sixth Sense, which is a brilliant film with Bruce Willis, by M. Night Shyamalan, probably said that wrong, but every time you see a ghost in that film, there is the colour red. And I only learned this from watching the DVD and the extra sort of bonus bits afterwards. And then when you watch the film back, you realise that every moment that there's a ghost in the film, whether there's some sort of quite spooky moments in that film,
yeah.
But there's all the prominent colour is always red. Now that I've said that, I don't know if you know that, Peter, but now that I've said that, next time you watch it, watch, and you'll go, oh, my God, red. And that's called an Easter egg. So it's something that you hide in plain sight that doesn't seem to have any relevance until you pull attention to it. So with Isabella in the cart, I then thought to myself, do you know what? I know if I do the semi-final, if I get through to the semi-final, I know that John Lennon is going to be in the semi-final because of Gandhi and John Lennon. And for those that haven't seen it, again, YouTube, you'll see me do a piece about art and painting and canvases, and there's John Lennon and Gandhi feature. So that's why the image of John Lennon is in Isabella's cot at the very start in the audition. But there's also the word hope. And originally what was going to happen was if I made it through to the final in 2018, the final was going to say to you, look, this is all about hope. It's always been about hope. And it was going to pull you back to that first audition and you'd see hope was in the cot the whole way through. And it's kind of like, oh my God, that's what it's always about, having hope and never giving up.
Yeah.
And obviously that year, again, for those of you that don't know the BGT story of me and everything that happened, a visit to YouTube will hopefully be enlightening, entertaining. Some people enjoy it. But I didn't make it to the final. I fell at the semi-finals, and as I said before, rightfully so. My semi-final wasn't strong enough, and there were better acts that deserved to get through, and they did. So I didn't make it through to the final. I went back home, and I was really down about it. It wasn't about winning. It was never about, winning, because I've never won anything in my life, and I don't say that with any pride. I say that with fact. Yeah. I've never won anything in my life. So I never expected to win. I thought I could make a moment and give a message, especially with our story, because it was such a compelling story with Tessa and Isabella and everything that we went through. But I was so upset. I was like, God, was that my 15 minutes to shine? And I blew it. I didn't make it. And it was about 3 months after, again, the final of BGT. Semi-finals are at the end of May normally, and the final is at the very beginning of June. So obviously we're in lockdown now, so the final would have happened, believe it or not, to BGT. It would have happened 2 days ago,
right,
if life was normal, but it's not been. So that's normally when BGT finishes. So anyway, you know, BGT finished, it wrapped for 2018, Lost Boy Sky won the series, and brilliant, brilliant act. Lee was fantastic. And that was it. You know, you go back to life and what is it you're doing and stuff. And, you know, I had bits and pieces coming in, but I wasn't, you know, it wasn't heaps and heaps of work. And you know me, Peter, I'm a creative. And for me, it's not about winning. It's about creating moments that hopefully an audience can go, oh, God, that was good. Like, whether he won or not or whatever, that was so well thought out. And that's kind of my medium, you know, that astonishment and hopefully inspiring and that kind of thing. Anyway, 2 months went by and I thought to myself, do you know what? I just said to Tessa, I said, look, that can't have been it. They can't have been it. There's got to be another way of doing this. I've got to think of another way of doing this. And I sort of analysed all the criticisms that I got for doing that first year, 2018. Obviously, you know, eight, you know this, having had Harry and the boys do it as 4MG last year, there is an enormous amount of praise. I mean, like, you know, 80, 90%, 95% of it is absolute praise. Oh, my God, yeah. Amazing, well done, congratulations, fantastic. I've never seen anything like that before, all those things. And you get that sort of 5, 10% of negativity, and that just sucks you into that negativity. You kind of just go, why didn't you like it? All these other people did. Why do you dislike me as a human being? Why do you not? Why do you think I, you know, whatever the negative connotations are. And I thought to myself, you know, one of the things that really came back was, oh, you know, he got through because it was a sympathy vote because of his story with his wife and his daughter. And I mentioned this, I think it's in episode 2 about all of that. So I won't go over that again. But what I will say is that I thought to myself, I want to challenge that notion. I want to challenge it. And I thought to myself, what about if I went back on BGT again, but with no backstory? And I didn't rely on the fact that I'm Mark Spellman from last year. Hey, guys, remember me and my sad story? And, you know, I completely eradicate that. So last year I went in as this very emotive story that hopefully inspired people and connected with people. But this year I go in as a non-entity, as a nothing. There is no story. You don't even know if it's man or woman or young or old, black or white or whatever. I'm completely genderless, raceless. I am absolutely incognito. You know, I don't even speak. You can't even tell. And that was years ago in 2011, and you remember this, I came up with an idea for a TV show called Prank. Yeah. And the idea was an anonymous magician who goes out and causes not chaos, but kind of gives across these political messages and almost like a Banksy type thing, but with your magic. And that was Prank. And Prank was in his normal attire, a white mask in a hoodie. And that was it. And I remember I sort of sitting in my office where I'm now, looking through some old ideas. And I always draw back to what I thought dreamt up previously. And I remember picking up this sort of photoshopped image of me standing there, arms crossed, hooded mask. You know, white hood, white mask with a black hoodie on. And I thought, oh my God, that's it. That couldn't be more anonymous. You really have no idea whether it's a male or a female. I'm not particularly tall. I'm not particularly large. So I could be, I'm 5'8". There are lots of women that are 5'6", 5'7", 5'8", whatever, you know. I could pass as a woman. I've got quite a large rear. So again, that could be, and that was it. And I remember running over to the house because it's at the end of the garden, my studio. Run over to the house and I said, Tessa, I've got it. This is it. This is it. I'm doing it again. And Tessa went to me, what are you going to do? And I showed her the picture. I said, I'm going on as this guy, as this person. And she went, really? Looked at me like, Mark, come on. You know, like how's Joe Public at home going to connect with a faceless, anonymous, doesn't even speak, hooded character that looks a bit creepy? How's that going to work? And I remember I said to Tessa, I said, not because of who I am, not because of how I sound or what I look like or my history, but because of what I say. And everything that you hear when you hear all those things that X says about us being one, and that really is me at my best. That's my philosophies on us as a human race. I don't see race. I don't see color. I try not to see religion or anything like that. All I look for is good people, and that's it. And in this life, you know, unfortunately, there are some bad people.
Yeah.
But there are good people, and I don't care where you're from, what you look like, who you are, what God you believe in. I don't believe in a God. I don't care if you do. It doesn't matter to me. You know, the fundamental thing is, are you a good human being? And if you're a good human being, then that's great. You know, you're winning. You are winning. And that's where X came from. And this whole notion of, like, you know, forget about me, forget who I am and everything else. And then I started just writing manically, writing, coming up with just this notion of just connection and humans, and forget about every external influence, you know, the politics, what football team you support, all that nonsense that means absolutely nothing. Fundamentally, when we are born as human beings, whether you're a black, white, in between, whatever you are, we are born as blank canvases. You know, we don't hate anyone when we're born.
Yeah.
All of this, or we don't disagree or dislike or have any conflict with anyone when we're born. You know, that is things that come into our lives as we develop and grow, depending upon our surroundings. And, you know, if only we could preserve for as long as possible the innocence of a child, this world would be an incredible place. Yeah. You know, it would be far, far better than it is, you know. And that was the premise of X. And I thought, I'm not going to rely on a backstory. I'm not going to rely on who I am, Mark Spellman from last year, who I did have success. You know, I was the highest viewed act the year before. You know, I was the favorite to win it and all that kind of stuff and all those accolades that don't mean much, you know, but they were there. And then I went, and I just thought to myself, why? You know, and I mentioned it to you. I said, you know, and once I kind of really refined the idea, I spoke to you and I said, I'm going to go for it again. And you were like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing to lose. And that's one of the things that doing BGT, even before X, you know, as myself, real learning curve for me in my sort of development as a human being, I've always avoided no's, you know, yeah. Rejection. And if there's any chance that someone might say no, then I'd rather not hear it, not take the chance, not hear it, and then just avoid it at all costs and just stay in my comfort zone and just and go where I know I'm most likely going to get a yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And BGT is not that place because you don't know what's going to happen there, you know, and it's for everyone to see. And that was a real big learning curve. So that's why I went back as X, because I wanted to, first of all, I wanted to finish the story. And that is to sort of, to do multiple things, really, to show that, you know, you don't have to have a backstory to be successful. You can just do a compelling piece of entertainment that connects people. But saying that, I don't care if you've got a backstory. And I don't mind if you talk about something that is truly relevant to your existence on this planet. So as we mentioned back, I think it's episode 2 or 3, I spoke about Serene, the girl who's on BGT at the moment as we're recording this, yeah. Who went blind at the age of 11. She's 14 years old and she's an incredible singer. Music is her passion because she cannot see. So now everything has become what she can hear and what she can speak and sing. And that for me is hugely relevant. Her past and what she's gone through is massively relevant. It's almost like you can't have her on that stage without talking about that, because that is a defining moment that has pushed her into this moment of exploring her voice. Her vision is not through sight, you know. So anyway, so that's why I went back as X. That's why I went back as an anonymous. A lot of people ask why a woman's voice. I'll clarify that now. When I came up with the notion of being anonymous, Tess said to me, but Mark, the moment you speak, people will recognize your voice. You were massive on the show last year. And I was like, you're right. So I'll distort my voice. Went into the office, studios, Area 50, sat down with all my computer equipment, started distorting my voice. And I'm looking at this image of me with a white mask, hoodie on, you know, completely anonymous, with this distorted voice. I'm going, Jesus, that is just so scary. Just is a bit unnerving. It's like Michael Myers, you know, like a Halloween kind of thing. And I thought, how can I change that? And a really good friend of mine called Mel, it's a mutual friend with me and Tess, actually, well, Tess's friend first, but Mel's just such a good soul. And she works with Tessa a lot and stays with us normally once a week, obviously not now in lockdown, but normally every week on a Wednesday night, Mel would stay with us. Mel's English. A lovely sort of speaking voice, very sort of quite posh if she wants to be. And I thought, and I just said to her, Mel, listen, I'm going to tell you a secret that I, you know, no one else knows apart from Tessa and Peter Nardi and Colin know this secret at this moment. And that is, I might be doing BGT again. I might do it. And I'm going to try and go in as an anonymous, but I can't use my voice. Can you just read these lines for me? And she read these lines and then I distorted her voice slightly. And I was like, oh my God, that's perfect. It's perfect because it had a female voice, clearly a female voice, although distorted, it was softer. It immediately softened X as a character. So if you imagine your worst monster, demon, whatever, you know, in your mind, walking into your room in the middle of the night, and now give it a female voice, immediately it breaks it down slightly. It reduces the scare factor, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that's why X has got a female voice. That's why X is completely anonymous. And, you know, that's why X really, it's, that whole audition piece as well was about Ant and Dec. And that was a bit of a tip of the hat to both of them, because we mentioned before that, you know, Ant was going through some troubles. This was his first moment back on BGT. And I thought to myself, they kindly gave me the Golden Buzzer the year before. So I'm going to highlight their incredible connection as two guys that started out on Biker Grove in 1989 and have still got a very successful working career, you know, partnership, which most partnerships don't last that long. They really don't. I mean, you look at all the great double acts of, you know, throughout the history of time. I mean, apart from like Morecambe and Wise, which ironically Ant and Dec are very much compared to, you know, like modern day kind of, you know, Morecambe and Wise, but so many don't and didn't last, you know. And so that whole routine was very much, this is not about me, it's about Ant and Dec and their amazing connection. And that was it.
Yeah.
And that's why I went back on. And it was just, and it was just to make the final. And again, not for a second did I think I had any chance of winning. Even taking the mask off, you know, because I always thought to myself, if I take that mask off in the final, which I always intended on doing, I always thought to myself, you know, I will take off the mask and I will say, here you go, this is me. And it's almost like that affirmation of kind of going, you know, I got to the final, if I manage to do it, I'd only take the mask off if I got to the final.
Yeah.
And I'll take the mask off in the final. And I go, and there you go. For everyone that said that it couldn't be done, you have to have a sob story or this, that, and the other. No, not at all. I'm here. I'm here in the final of BGT because of what I said and what I did, with no backstory whatsoever, no history. No one knew who I was. And I think I proved the point. And when I did AGT Champions in LA, I didn't make it through to the final. I got through to the semi-finals, and there was just a lot of technical issues and things just went wrong and so much stuff. And that's another episode. Mark that up as a let's talk about AGT Champions semi-final X. It just went totally wrong on so many levels, and I'm happy to talk about that. But after that semi-final in LA, Simon very sweetly just sort of said, can you get Mark to come down to my dressing room? And I went down to Simon's dressing room and sat with him for about half an hour. And we were just talking about life, BGT year one for me, BGT as X, and everything in between. And honestly, I had a lot of respect for Simon after BGT year one.
Yeah.
I had a lot of respect for Simon after BGT as X. And sitting down with him and just chatting as dads, because obviously he's got Eric and I've got Isabella, and we just chatted as dads about life, and he was very complimentary and said some incredible things. And he said, you know, and for those that want to know this, and it's really important, I always thought to myself, did Simon know? Like, did he know? And I sat in that dressing room with him in LA, in Pasadena, in Los Angeles, just outside of Los Angeles. And we were chatting, and then I said, I've got a question. And I, you know, did you know? Because you're the boss, Simon. Did you know? And he said to me, he goes, Mark, honestly, he goes, when you got through to the final and you did that picture of me and you in the background, he goes, honestly, that freaked me out. Like, where was that photograph taken? How did you get it? Where was my security? You know, all these, it was funny. It was a great conversation. And he said, but he goes, I said to one of the producers, this X guy, anything I need to know? And it was Charlie Irvine, Irwin, who is one of the main guys at BGT. And after the semi-final, he now knew, going into the final, he knew that I was X, Charlie Irvine.
Right.
And he said to Simon, it will blow your mind. And Simon looked at him, and Charlie Irvine is like Simon's, like literally, like they are right, they're adjacent to each other.
Yeah.
Simon's the face of BGT, you know, the main man, the boss, and Psycho, and all that kind of stuff. And Charlie Irvine is right up there as the man behind the scenes.
Well, he's running it all, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I mean, and he's a lovely man, and I still have a great relationship with Charlie. He's such a lovely man. And he just said to Simon, he said, Simon, you know, listen, I'm just telling you, it's going to blow your mind. And for anyone that knows Simon now about magic, is Simon does not want to know how a trick works. He doesn't want to do any element of it that he's got any inkling of how these tricks work. He just wants to sit there as much as possible as a punter, as a member of the audience, and just experience that magic in that moment. So he turned around to Charlie and at that point and just went, that's fine. That's great. Okay, I can't wait to see what's next. And then so Simon's answer basically was he did not know. When that mask came off, he genuinely didn't know. And he said to me in Pasadena, he said, when have you ever seen me speechless? He goes, I always have got something to say. He goes, that's who I am. I've been that person on, you know, X Factor and BGT for years and years and years. I've always got something to say. But he goes, watch the moment when they go, Simon, you know, Ant and Dec say, Simon. And I go, and I'm umming, in my head, I'm comprehending what everything that's just taken place.
Yeah.
And he said, so he goes, I promise you, I did not know. And I know Alicia didn't know because Alicia was pregnant and she nearly knocked her chair over when she stood up. Amanda, you can see 100%. And David Walliams, I've met since BGT, private party where I was performing. And he didn't know. He said it was one of the most ingenious. He just said, he goes, he out of all of them, is the hardest to please with magic.
Yeah.
He kind of, you know, he kind of just like, you know, magic, pretending, ooh, spooky and all that kind of stuff. But he just said, he goes, it was just, you just came on with someone else. It was, you know, so that's it. So hopefully that answer, I don't know if there's any other questions you want to ask me about it, but and I should point out as well that a lot of people say, well, how did you get through the application process? Obviously you knew, Colin knew, and our friend Russ Stevens, you know, sort of, opened, made things slightly easier for X to get through certain doors for that very first audition. But aside from that, no one else knew. And Colin Klaus, who we will get on one of these podcasts one day to talk about it, he was my voice, literally. I turned up as X. I had the mask on the whole day. I had a rucksack with smoothies and Starbucks Frappuccino things in bottles with straws to get through the day. The mask never came off. You know, it was a long period of time in Manchester. And Colin did all the talking. Every time someone would approach, well, we need to set X's props. And they'd walk towards X sitting down over in, you know, the sort of holding area. And Colin would just intervene and just go, no, just talk to me. He's not going to respond.
Yeah, and it was really like that. I mean, it's hard to sort of imagine, but obviously for that last week of BGT, most of us are around London. I mean, me and the boys were in London all week, and whenever we saw you sort of around or on set, you just sort of not ignored us, but you were this sort of mystic guide that no one sort of went near.
It was so much fun, Pete, honestly, because, you know, as it was polar opposite experience, and I think that's really interesting for you because obviously you went on with 4MG and one of the 4MG members is your son.
Yeah.
So it's deeply emotive, you know, it's very, you know, and I had experienced that in year one in 2018 as Mark Spellman, but as year two, I'm X.
Yeah.
You know, if I never made it through to the semifinals, no one knew who I was.
Yeah.
Apart from a very select group, you know, you and Colin and Russ and whatever, you know. But other than that, I always say there's like six people that knew in total, and that was you, Russ and Colin, Tessa, Mel, who did the voice for X, and my mum.
Yeah.
Even my dad did not know. So for everyone that, you know, my mum ended up phoning my dad on the Sunday after the final and said, you know, did you see Mark on BGT? And my dad went, well, yeah, but that, and she went, no, watch it on catch up. And my dad sat there and watched all of the performances and saw the mask come off and watched it all on the Sunday, the day after it had all finished. on the Monday, I think it was actually. Sorry, the Monday, you know. Monday. But yeah, so it was the polar opposite experience for me. As X, I was anonymous and I didn't have to do any press interviews. They couldn't interview me.
No.
Again, which is totally different, you know. Even when we were doing some of the shoot for, you know, you guys for 4MG, you did the whole Stranger Things
yeah.
sort of like in the old school and stuff. And for me, not everyone I know, if you go on YouTube, you can find the clips here and there, but there are clips of me like near the London Eye, not near the London Eye, sorry, near the Shard on London Bridge, all around London as X, just standing there with all these people just whizzing past me and stuff. And even on those shoots, one of the guys that was the main director for those, kind of, I don't know what you call those, VT moments, I guess.
Yeah, it is the VT, isn't it? Come on, they played a little video.
Exactly. Now, that guy with me was a guy called Casey.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Casey was fantastic. But Casey had been in my house the year before doing the VT with me, Tessa, and Isabella.
Right.
So it was so odd for me. I'm in a mask. He does not know who I am. And you know, we turn up at London Bridge. We've got these cars that are driving us everywhere and stuff. And we turn up at London Bridge and Casey is talking to Colin. Can X just walk along there a little bit? And then Colin's going, yeah, I'll ask him. X, could you mind walking along there? And I sort of look at Colin and sort of nod a little bit and then walk down there. It was brilliant. I felt a bit like Darth Vader. It was like I could just walk around and just be totally not me. And obviously, anyone that listens to this podcast can hear how much I talk. Can you imagine me being X? I just didn't talk. Can you imagine me not talking? I mean, it'd be heaven.
It was genius. I mean, it's the way it was structured and everything else. And I think, you know, having it, being a talker like you are, having it scripted to the fact that you cannot deviate, I think is a very good thing for the show. Because the thing is, when even for the boys, when you're there with the judges, especially David Walliams, it doesn't matter how much you rehearse your lines, he's gonna throw something in.
He's a joker.
He's a joker and he wants to say something and everything else, which is great. But if you're scripted word for word, and it can throw you off a bit, and having a recorded voice that's doing it, there's just no, you're just talking over him, you know.
I think as well with X, one of the things that I think worked in my favor, I mean, one of the things that really happened by accident was when I get Ant and Deck to sit down in that audition, there was press about, you know, magician gets Ant and Deck to sit the wrong way round.
Yeah.
And this was really funny because I didn't, you know, I mean, I love Ant. I mean, I genuinely do like Ant and Deck. I watch, you know, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Yeah.
I love what they do. I always say to Tessa, like, you know, obviously you've been a best mate of mine for ages, you know, like forever. And I say to Tessa, can you imagine if me and Peter were shipped off to Australia for 3 weeks to do a TV show and paid all that money?
How awesome.
I mean, like, hello, like life could, that's just like winner chicken dinner, right?
Yeah.
So I've always loved that in Deck. I love, you know, their humor, their cheesy, tacky, cliche comedy. I love all of it. And they're really nice guys as well. And what you see is what you really get with them. So all those Ant and Deck fans out there, they really are like that. They really are super sweet and really nice. And where was I going with this? Ant and Deck.
Sitting the wrong way around.
So that's it. Getting them to sit the wrong way around. Complete accident. I wasn't aware that they had a particular way of standing.
Yeah.
But the way that I'd routine everything for that act was that Deck sits there and Ant sits there. And obviously, you know, you do get a walkthrough for your act on BGT. So before I did that act at Manchester, earlier on in the afternoon, they say, can we have X and, you know, and his props on stage? And you literally, it's a whirlwind, like, sort of 3 minute run through.
And the run through isn't really for you, it's for the cameras.
No, it's for the cameras. So literally, like, you know, so Colin's there going, so Deck's going to sit on this chair, Ant's going to sit on this chair. And then one of the producers said, oh, but Ant and Deck, they're always the other way around. Mm. So then Colin came up to me as X and then went, they sit the other way around, Mark, you know, and obviously privately. And then I went, tonight they don't. And then Colin turned around and said, Deck will sit in that chair. X has said, Deck will sit in that chair and Ant will sit in this chair. And then the producer just looked and then sort of went, oh, yeah, that's going to be so good. That's going to be, yeah, yeah, brilliant. That's actually brilliant, brilliant. And then just ticked it off and just went, that was it. So now when you see Ant and Deck come, they didn't know. So when you see that audition where I turn around and I you know, the voiceover says, you know, and Deck, please take a seat to my right and please take a seat to my left. Deck kind of compliantly goes and sits in that right-hand chair, whereas Ant, you can see him, he goes, what?
Yeah.
The wrong way around. But then it's X, and you can just see, okay, all right. You know, and that was the thing. It was really interesting just having that dynamic, because so many of the other acts, they almost became, because there was a lot of magicians on that year as well.
Yeah.
And a lot of magicians, there was this sort of thing going on about who's the guy underneath the white mask? Who's X? And it was like, well, it's got to be a magician that we all know, but who is it? So there was a lot of speculation. And even there was bets with the crew. And one of the guys in the crew came up to me when we were doing the rehearsal for the semi-final and went, I've got one question. You don't have to speak or anything. I know you won't speak. Are you Dynamo?
Well, I think that was... Didn't Dynamo post that? Or someone posted that it was
no,
Dynamo?
No, Dynamo put up a post about he did PK. You know, the effect that I do is a sort of a touch routine.
Yeah.
Now, that effect in itself is like 15, 20 years old, if not older. And everyone, Darren Brown has done it, you know, Dynamo's done it, David Blaine has done it, I've done it for years as Mark Spellman. But it just seemed like the perfect thing to do with Ant and Deck. So yeah, Dynamo did post up something with a sort of question mark. Because I think there was just so much speculation. Who's the magician under the mask? So yeah, but I just thought to myself, right, first of all, Dynamo, I wish... I was as slim as Dynamo, you know, he's like properly slim.
Yeah.
And in all honesty, Dynamo's a massively successful magician. He doesn't need to come on VGT and wear a mask, you know, he really doesn't need to, you know, he's too busy doing his sponsorships with Pepsi and everything else. But anyway, so, you know, so it was a fascinating time, really interesting. The interesting thing for me as well was the lack of media on X. Because people were, he doesn't do interviews.
Yeah.
You can't do an interview with X. He's not going to come on the phone and talk to you. And as Mark Spellman, I was inundated with interviews all over the, you know, from all over the world, like literally, like, you know, a newspaper in Adelaide phoning me up to do an interview as Mark Spellman about me and Tessa and Isabella. But as X, I was left alone. You know, I was this non-entity. So it was that's why I did it. That's why I came back. That's all the things that you need to know about the backstory of it all. And genuinely, none of those judges, Ant and Deck, no one knew.
And that's it. That's the story. And do you know what? You have actually timed that absolutely perfect, because we are right at the end of this week's podcast. So that was the story of X. And just to say,
can I just say, what are the minutes on that?
We are nearly 39 minutes.
I know, but we've not got a horror story, some sort of work horror story. We might have something for 5 minutes. Come on.
Go on then.
Otherwise, the whole
give us one of yours.
I gave you one. No.
I gave you one. You give me one of yours. And get it in 5 minutes.
All right, okay. So basically, when you are a gigging magician, you work for a thing called agents. You don't have one agent, you have multiple, right? So you can work through loads of different entertainment agents. I was working for this one particular agent, and they said, look, Mark, we're doing a yearly sort of summer conference where we get everyone in from the company together. and it gives you a really good chance, if you don't mind doing like sort of 20 minutes on stage as Mark Spellman, this is back in like 2013, you know, do a 20-minute spot, and then loads of people in the company will see you and then possibly, you know, sort of recommend you for actual gigs. No fee, but it's a great opportunity for you to sort of, you know, sort of broadcast your skills to other people that might not have heard of you in the company. Yep, no problem. So get up and I do some mind reading, this, that, and the other. There's a thing called blockhead, and that is where you hammer nails in your face, right? And I think I've got a YouTube video up of me doing this in my head. I'm not sure. But you hammer nails in your head. It's not a trick. It's actually a real thing where you do take nails and you insert them into your nasal cavities. And I've done it for years and years and years.
It's an old sideshow thing, isn't it?
Yeah, like a sideshow, like a
freak
show. Fakir stunt, you know. And so I've done it for years and years and years. Anyway, so I always have that at the back. Whenever I was doing a stage performance, I'd always have that at the back on a table in a glass. And if it was a particularly rowdy crowd, or I just sort of felt like I wanted to do it, it would be a good thing to do, I would just sort of say, look, ladies and gentlemen, I want to show you something truly unique and different. Now, this is not for the faint-hearted, blah, blah, blah. I'll go back and I'd get this glass, get someone up on stage, and there's like three massive nails and a big spoon, and I'd take these nails and I'd hammer them in my face and leave the glass and the nails with the person as a souvenir. And it's one of those shock moments where people go, oh my God, you know, like, he did this mind reading, but then he had a nail in his head. And it's one of those effects.
Yeah.
So anyway, imagine now. So I'm kind of doing this performance. Some of them are a little bit sort of slightly verging on intoxicated. You know, it's a summer do for this work. Or they all know each other, which is always a worst case scenario, because if you all know each other, you go, hey, let's get, you know, like a bit jolly. And so I sort of thought, you know what, I'm going to finish on the nails. Let's do this. So I said, look, there's one last effect, you know, and then by a show of hands, if you give me a round of applause and let me know if you want to see this or not, but I want to show you something that is very bizarre. It is not an illusion. It is not trickery. It's 100% real, but I promise you, you'll remember this for the rest of your lives. If you want me to show you, I will show you by a round of applause. Everyone is obviously going, yes, definitely. Like, what is he going to do? Took the nails out, got this young lady to come up and assist me on stage, and hammered the first nail in my face. Audience, stunned silence. Everyone's going, what is going on? It's funny because everyone holds their nose. You know, that sort of position, like you're praying, almost holding your nose. Everyone does that. So I said, look, you know, doing one nail is one thing. Let me do it with a second one. So I hammer the other nail in the other nostril. And I take the third nail, hammer it in my right nostril, because I can actually hammer more nails in my right nostril than my left.
Yeah.
Reason being is it's just physiological sort of thing as human beings. Our right nostril is slightly wider than our left. Who knew? And I walk into the audience to give them a bit of a closer view, because there's no screens, but I've got a spotlight on me. Walk into the audience. And I'm sort of like just angling my head up. Everyone can see these nails in my face. Everyone's freaking out. It's one of those moments you sort of going, yeah, this is going really well. Turn back, start walking towards the stage. And this woman's on stage. I imagine my back's to the audience as I'm walking towards the stage. And all of a sudden, I just feel this liquid come down my face. And I thought to myself, oh, no. I could feel it literally just trickling down. I thought, right, it's one of two things, right? It's either going to be snops, for the want of another word, you know, mucusy, yeah, snot, nasal juice, whatever you want to call it, or it's going to be blood. It's one of those two things. Other than that,
either isn't good.
Right? Yeah, either's not great, but I would have preferred nasal juice, just regular nasal juice, because I can quickly wipe that and just get away with it. Anyway, so then as I'm walking towards this woman on stage, I look at her face, and her face just goes white, and she looks at me like, oh, like that, and I think it's going to be the red stuff. So then I reach up, and I'm not fussy, I'm not hemophobic or anything, I'm not worried about blood or anything like that. So I reach up and I just gently wipe my nose, and I'm caked in blood, And I walk up, and I've got the time of walking up the steps to this stage to come up with something that is going to normalize the fact that I'm bleeding profusely in front of an audience. So I walk up the stage, the stairs. This woman's on stage looking at me horrified. And then I've got the microphones on a stand, and I just went, is this more impressive with blood or without? And I turned round. And then the whole audience went, oh, like this. And then I got a rubber glove out. It was a gag that I used to get a rubber glove out, get us to put a rubber glove on. Yeah. And then we'd pull these nails out, put them into a wine glass, and that was the end of the trick. But normally with no blood. But now I'm getting her to put this rubber glove on. She's pulling these nails out. Just blood pouring out my face as I'm doing it. And she's putting the nails in the glass. She's like, and I'm just thinking, please don't pass out. Not me, her. I'm thinking, please don't pass out. And I thought, I have to end this. Like, this isn't real. So then I just gave her the glass and just went, a souvenir. And really, she's going back to her table with nails in a glass, caked in my blood.
Oh, my God.
And then I just went, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've... I think I said something about, aren't you glad that you ate before my performance? It's been an honour performing for you. I think it's safe to say you'll never forget this moment. My name is Mark Spellman. Good night. And everyone went crazy, huge round of applause. And to finish the story off, the weirdest part about it all was afterwards, I sort of got my nose, walked off the stage, ran out the side entrance, ran to my car, thought, I've got to clean myself up, because I was now supposed to go and network with all these people. Hey, guys, what do you think of the show? And I went back to my car, and I thought, I couldn't find any water or any tissues. So I literally got a screen wipe, you know, the things you wipe your cut, the inside of your, you know, screen wipe, and Red Bull. Poured the Red Bull onto the screen wipe, and I'm rubbing, cleaning my face up with Red Bull and screen chemicals in Red Bull
on my face.
And then I thought to myself, God, you know, I can't go back in there and say that that was real. I've got to say it was a trick. So I found a little squeezy bulb in my case. I've got a case of just loads of nonsense, like loads of bits and bobs and tool kits and whatever. And I grabbed this bulb and I thought, well, I put it in my pocket. And it sounds really weird, but I went back into the gig, and I'm going, and everyone's going, oh my God, that was amazing. Oh my God, the bit at the end with the oh my God, freaked me out. That was amazing and whatever. And the one guy that asked me to do it came over and said, Mark, he goes, mate, that was amazing. Everyone's talking about it. I've never seen you do that bit with the nails with blood. Because he'd seen me do it loads of times before, because he was my booker guy
right, who
had asked me to do this. I've never seen you do it with blood. And I went, I know, I thought I'd just ramp it up for tonight. And then I pulled the bulb out of my pocket, and I went, I just had this in my hand, but don't tell anybody. And he went, oh my God, you genius. Brilliant, Mark. I didn't see that. My God, I thought it was real. And I was going, I know. Brilliant, eh? So that it's the weirdest awesome. Thing. What I did was absolutely real, but I'm actually going, no, it's a trick. Whereas most of the time, as magicians, we go, it's not a trick. That's actually real.
Yeah.
So it's a polar opposite. So that's my horror story, and that's it. And we're probably on to about an hour and a half now.
Oh, we're coming up to 50 minutes. That's a brilliant horror story. And guys, if you've got any horror stories from your place of work, please send them in on our Facebook page, which is Wizards Whiskey and Waffle. You can send it in as a recorded message if you want us to play it during the podcast, or write it down for me to read it over air. And if you want it to be anonymous, obviously just put that and we won't put your name. But guys, thank you so much for joining us. Mark, we will be back next week.
Yes, thank you. And God, again, I'm so sorry.
Well, next week we will get on to some proper waffle. I don't know what we're going to talk about, but it should
no,
be fun.
You know what? No, I see what I want to do. We've spoken about, we've covered Mark Spellman on BGT, we've covered X on BGT. I want to know now, as a father of Isabella, you know, my life as a father, I never knew what it would be like to be a father. I never did. You have these thoughts and things, but until you've got that child, until you are a responsible, hopefully responsible father, the world changes. So yes. I want to know what it's like. I know what it was like me being on BGT, but next episode, I really want to know what it's like your son being part of 4MG the experience of 4MG, but your son, how does that change the dynamic for you as a father? This is, you know, your flesh and blood, you know, hopes and aspirations. So I really want to find out, like, you know, the in, and I mean depth, I'm talking depth, you know, like your fears, your concerns, all of that stuff, because that's the stuff that's really interesting.
Well, we'll get into that on the next episode. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us. And remember to leave reviews on whatever platform you're listening on. And, yeah, any horror stories you have will be truly appreciated. So, yeah, goodbye until next week. Say goodbye,
Thank
Mark.
You. Take care. Goodbye, guys. Take care. Be safe. And hopefully see you soon.
Yeah. Be safe, guys. Speak to you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Wizards Whiskey and Waffle Podcast with Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman. If you've enjoyed this episode, please be sure to rate and subscribe. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.